Hello, Super Marcy here, just with a small disclaimer before listening to the episode. During the recording, there was some issue with my microphone that I was not aware of until after recording was completed. I have done my best to edit my audio as best as possible, so please keep that in mind as you listen to the episode and enjoy. The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the King Zone's Book Club podcast, a spin-off of the King Zone podcast, where my lovely co-host and I will be looking at the written works of Stephen King, mostly with the various short stories, with some other surprises, hopefully down the track. I am your host, Super Marcy, and it is great to be back once again, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Steve Boltz. Hello.
Hello. Hi, it's been too long.
It feels like it's been 5 years.
I know. It has to have been 2 months. Has to have been at least 2 months. We've got to schedule these. We've got to be tighter with this.
Yes.
We will be
having a much better schedule in the future, everybody. But a big thank you to everyone who has listened in and given us some feedback so far. We really appreciate it and very excited to get into this episode for today, where we will have one short story and one teleplay, yes. I believe.
Yes. I'm looking at this as the spooky technology episode.
Yes.
Or AKA the Tales from the Dark Side episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say, first of all, I was having a conversation with my friend, Ben, who suggested that perhaps The Jaunt falls under spooky technology. And I said, well, spooky technology must be distinguished from like technology gone awry, because that would feature trucks and the Mangler, you know?
Yes.
Spooky technology, I think, it's less household items trying to kill you and more household items acting in weird supernatural ways. Okay.
Yes.
Whereas I think the jaunt worked perfectly fine. We'll get into that story another time. The jaunt worked perfectly fine. It was that upstart kid who fucked everything up, you know? So I think today the spooky technology episode features Sorry Right Number and Word Processor of the Gods, both of which, as I mentioned, were Tales from the Dark Side episodes. And that was actually how I found Word Processor of the Gods. It was the first time I heard of it was on Tales from the Dark Side.
Mm.
Yeah, I hadn't read Skeleton Crew at the time.
Oh, very interesting and intriguing. So with these two nicely put together, and we will begin the proceedings with the short story, Word Processor of the Gods.
This was great. This was actually first published in the January 1983 issue of Playboy for the collectors out there rushing to eBay right now. It was collected in Skeleton Crew, which is where I read it, and adapted for Tales from the Dark Side. It was one of the first episodes of Tales from the Dark Side, I think, within the first 10 episodes of the first season.
Yes, I think it was episode 8 or 9.
Episode 8, I think you're right, yeah. Yeah, so this happened between Playboy and Skeleton Crew, which is where, like I said, which is where I saw it. And because, you know, should have had access to Playboy. I was 13 years old. You know what I mean? I should have had a stack, but I did not. Didn't actually get to read it until Skeleton Crew was published. And I really like this story. I like this a lot.
Yes, I had not read this one. I hadn't really heard of this one, to be fair. And I don't think I've actually seen many Tales from the Dark Side episodes. It is quite more obscure, it feels like, these days. So, yeah, I am curious to actually watch the episode after having read the story. Okay. And I know it's the very stupidest and most juvenile of humor, but as the story starts off with Wang computers, I did laugh. I'm sorry, because Wang is slang for penis.
I think it's the is it in the introduction to Skeleton Crew, actually, where King talks about having a conversation with a friend of his who, you know, King was really excited, and I think it's about this story, actually. He was really excited to have gotten paid, you know, X amount of dollars for Word Processor of the Gods appearing in Playboy. And his friend says, yeah, but you actually didn't, did you? I mean, your agent got a cut. You're going to tell me you're not in the 50% tax bracket? And he just broke it down to where King somehow made like 10 bucks for this story or something. And in that story, in that diatribe, he mentions his own word processor, which he says is a big wang, and I'll thank you to keep the smart comments to yourself. So I've always, as with you, I always get that sort of tee, you know, when starting this story. But
it did catch me a little bit off guard. So the story the plot of this story, Richard Hagstrom?
Richard Hagstrom.
I believe he's like a middle-aged writer. He has a very mean wife in Lena, and he's got a typical teenage son in Seth. However, he is given a special word processor that his teenage nephew, Jonathan, was preparing for him. However, Jonathan and Richard's brother and sister-in-law all died several weeks prior in a car accident. Mm. And as Richard sets up the word processor, he gets the message, it says, "Happy birthday, Uncle Richard." So it was meant for him as a birthday gift. But it isn't before long that he realizes this word processor is no ordinary word processor made from parts of Wang Computers, IBM, and Radio Shack parts.
I love it. It's a Wang keyboard, an IBM screen. There's a Lionel train transformer in there.
Yes.
Radio Shack wires, telephone parts, like you said, and an Erector Set motor.
That's right, an Erector Set. It's not what you dirty-minded people are thinking of.
I do love, like, I love King's, like, what's the craziest stuff I can just put in this? You know, just to throw it all together. And in the end, like, continue with the synopsis and tell us what happens with this thing, because I want to get back to the parts.
Yes. So, as he discovers, this word processor has some kind of special abilities. And after he writes something on there and he deletes it, that object then just does not exist there anymore.
Mm. His wife's picture. Right, I think
it was his wife's picture that he really didn't like in his office. And then he's rather annoyed with his son, so he decides to just erase his son. But while all this is going on, the word processor is overheating, it's sparking, it's smoking, I think, and seems that time is very limited on what he can do with the word processor.
And he realizes that not only can he delete things,
he can make things exist.
He can make things exist, like the 12 gold doubloons in the sack on his... He writes,
yes.
"My floor is bare except for 12 gold doubloons in a small sack." And suddenly they're there, and he's $27,000 richer, right? If he sells them as coins, if he sells them as gold, it's a whole other thing. So he starts putting two and two together. He's like, right, okay, got rid of the wife, got rid of the son,
really liked my brother's wife and son.
I really liked his nephew as well. He feels like, you know, his brother should have gotten the awful wife and son, and he should have got the lovely wife and son. So by the end, he's changed his life, where his formerly sister-in-law is now his wife, and his nephew is now his son.
And it all works out. And we have to assume that his brother died alone because he deleted his wife and son. He didn't, like, do a family swap in the end. And he says to John at the end, you know, John says, I'll just, you know, sorry this thing blew up, Dad. I'll cannibalize anything I can and junk the rest. And Richard says, yeah, delete it from our lives, which I liked. I really liked as the final line.
Yeah, this is kind of an example of a story where there is, like, obviously the twist in the story is that this word processor has these abilities to erase or create things. And you would assume that this would kind of have an ending where Richard makes a mistake and life is going to be absolutely terrible.
But monkey's paw, like the monkey's paw.
Yeah, exactly. The monkey's paw philosophy. But in this case, Richard gets exactly what he wants, and there doesn't seem to be any consequences. I think in itself is actually the most interesting and intriguing and unexpected twist of a story.
Yeah, I quite like that, because we like Richard. We liked him, you know? He was put upon from a kid. He had one of those magic eight balls as a kid, and his older brother, 2 years older, would just, you know, he smashed it. The older brother was just a prick from day one. So he never had it good. And you get the feeling like he deserves this. He really deserves this. You know, he wrote a novel, didn't really go anywhere, you know, and his wife doesn't let him forget it. So, yeah, in the end, when it was like the monkey's paw with absolutely no consequences. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. A happy ending. Nice.
Yeah, and that's really what surprised me. And as you said, Richard is actually quite a likable character. You get it is quite short. I think it's about 9-10 pages or so. You get the feeling that Richard has had it quite shit, and that his brother Roger was an absolute asshole who abuses his wife, drinks, blah blah blah. And it's almost like you expect, like I said, you're expecting that as he does this, something bad is going to happen. And when it doesn't, it is just the biggest shock.
Right. And it's like, oh, that's nice. That's good. Let's go back to the parts, Marcy. Let's go back to the parts. What I love about this is that there's no reason in the world that these particular parts would, you know, be able to change reality as we know it. There's absolutely no reason. And I think you could replace any of these parts with anything else. You know, there's no logic to this. There's no, you know, it's just like, oh, hey, look, we put these things together and all of a sudden, hey, you know, and I do sort of dig that. I love that there's no emphasis whatsoever put on this. You know, Richard never once thinks, I could get all these pieces and you know, put this thing back together. Or, you know, he never once thinks about this or why this is happening. And I know it's a short story. There's not a lot of time for that. You know, if it were, I don't know, if they turned it into a feature film or something, you'd probably go into that as a subplot. But I just think it's so cool that these random parts are put together. They create a magic word processor. And nobody really gives him a second thought. You know, that's very cool to me. That's very, very cool to me for some reason.
Yeah. I do think it was probably the Erector set that was in the word processor that actually caused everything.
Without the Erector.
You mix the Erector with the Wang. I mean, Mr. King, you knew what puns you were doing there.
Now, is there an implication here that John sort of knew what he was building? Because
I kind of feel like there was, in a way.
Right. There's the neighbor. There's Jonathan's neighbor, Mr. Nordstrom.
He seems to know. Like, he has a lot, way too much knowledge. So I feel like he knew exactly what
Mr. Nordstrom.
John Jonathan was doing.
Talked about what a special kid John was. Mm. John had a sense of doom about him, Richard says. There was this sense of doom, which I guess, I don't know, does that imply that he knew what was coming? You know, he'd started making this thing 2 weeks before. I don't know. There's in the episode that they really lean on that heavily. You know, John has a line like, there's a flashback scene where he's like, oh, maybe I'll build you a word processor. And the implication that he actually says, I don't have much time, you know. Mm. And so you get that sense that he knew. What else was this kid playing around with? Like, I think there's a whole sort of untapped sub-story there of what John Hagstrom was building in that basement of his. Could he see the future? Did he know?
Could he have seen the future? Could it have been kind of like a Final Destination, like, vision thing? You could do a whole series on this character, what he knows and what... Why putting all these parts together has made a word processor that can do all these things.
I think I've just negated that whole thought process, though. If he knew what was going to happen and he had this word processor, wouldn't he himself change it?
He could have, but maybe someone else needed to do it. Maybe in order to change things, you had to want them or something.
Now I just think the whole story.
Now we've opened up way too many.
The whole story is flawed now for me. It's all flawed now for me. I can't even think about it anymore because we just, you know, once you start rabbit holing it, you become one of those, guys who thinks the characters in Rugrats are all dreams, and one of them is a heroin freak and something like that. So it just gets to be too much.
Well, my thought would be that in order for this word processor to be successful, it has to be made and then gifted. See,
again, that's another one of those things that it's like, why?
Because the wizard said so.
Exactly. And I guess if you accept that this word processor, yes, it changes reality, well, where does it stop? I guess you just have to accept the rest of it. And then, yes, then you would just become a nutty Stephen King conspiracy theorist. But I do quite enjoy this story, just from beginning to end. Just the story on its own without extrapolating, without tearing it apart like that. Yeah. I just think this is a really sweet story, except, Marcy, except for one thing.
And what is that one thing?
Oh, it's really troubling how, and I think we touched on this in The Lawnmower Man, but how easy it is for us to like Richard because his wife and his son are pieces of shit. Right? That just seems so, and not just pieces of shit, but like caricatures of pieces of shit.
Pieces of shit,
right? You know, like Harold Parkett's family, you know, they were the same. Now they may or may not have been. We know that he saw them as that. Like that was his, you know, perception of them. But I don't know. It's still the same sort of shortcut to getting us to, you know, getting us to sympathize for Richard because his wife is so awful. You know, she had no redeeming qualities at all. Like there's nothing.
Yeah, apparently.
You know, that's, for me, that's just one of those things that I bump against in a story. But again, a short story, 10 pages, how much detail can you really go into?
Yeah, that's right. You kind of have to have those shortcuts because you're trying to tell something in a limited span.
Yeah. That's on me. I know that's on me. That's not a flaw of the story. Look, I do. I love this story. I love this story a lot. And I give it, I go all the way with this one. I give this one 5 stars.
Excellent. I feel you with this. I really enjoyed it. It was obviously my first time reading it. And it was quite refreshing. So yeah, my out of 5 rating for this would probably be 4 out of 5. And I'm going to have to try and track down the Tales from the Dark Side episode so I can see it. I know that it stars Bruce Davison as Richard.
Yeah, Bruce Davison. I this was actually the first thing I saw him in. I hadn't yet seen Willard. So this is my introduction to him. And he's great, too. He's great. I get excited whenever I see him in anything. Guy's so cool.
Yeah. So I really need to check that out.
So, of course, the teleplay for Word Processor of the Gods was written by Michael McDowell, right? Who, I don't know if you know Michael McDowell. He wrote Beetlejuice, mm-hmm. right? He did this. As far as King goes, he did the screenplay for Thinner, which mm-hmm. I watched again last year. And I went on a Michael McDowell binge. I read like 90% of his books within like a 2-year period. Okay. And starting off with The Amulet, which my aunt bought me back in, I don't know, the 80s. She said it was the most horrifying book she'd ever read. I never got around to reading it, lost it or something. Finally found it here about 5 years ago. Didn't read it until 2 years ago.
Wow.
And she was absolutely right. Absolutely right. Michael McDowell's The Amulet is one of the most horrifying things you'll ever read. And it was great to see him. He actually wrote several episodes for Tales from the Dark Side, which I thought was pretty cool. But yeah, so there's a bit of a King connection here with Michael McDowell and Thinner. And Thinner, after reading all of Michael McDowell, actually it somehow felt to me like a Michael McDowell movie rather than a King movie. It was really bizarre because I was so steeped in Michael McDowell at that time. I could see his tone. I could see the tone that he put over Thinner. It was really cool. It was very, very,
very interesting because I do quite enjoy Thinner.
Good to see him involved in this. I think he did a good job with the adaptation. Found the main points of the story. Like he tightened it up. He tightened it up and didn't go too far. He left out all the parts. By the way, the Lionel train transport.
Damn it.
Which again was not integral to the story. I think he did a great adaptation here.
I look forward to eventually watching it. And the next story we will be discussing is Sorry, Right Number, which is written in teleplay form.
Well, this was an original teleplay anyway. This was not a short story. This was never a short story. This was an original story, again, written for Tales from the Dark Side. It was first published in Nightmares and Dreamscapes, but was written for Tales from the Dark Side. This one was season 4. This was in the final season, episode 9. And yeah, it does. It appear he did not adapt it. He didn't do anything with it. He just published the script in Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which is pretty cool. That was the first time anything like that had been done in a collection of stories, though the script for Silver Bullet had been published previously as a book. But it was weird flipping through Nightmares and Dreamscapes and seeing, because I saw it in the contents, and I thought, oh, great, you know, get to read the, you know, he's written a story, so sort of would have reverse engineered it from, but no, it was the teleplay, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, so this is quite different because it isn't exactly a short story. It is a story in short form, but an original idea that he had, which was written as a teleplay, as we said, in Tales from the Dark Side.
This is another one that I just sort of stumbled on one night. Tales from the Dark Side had, of course, it ran in syndication, and I never really knew when it was going to be on or anything. So one night I'm flicking around channels, and I hear the eerie music, you know, the familiar voiceover in the beginning, which I love. And I stopped and suddenly it was this, and it comes up and says, you know, written by teleplay by Stephen King. So I was like, whoa, hang on. Yeah. You know, I'm not as big a fan of this one as I am Word Processor. Go ahead and tell us what this one was about.
Yes. So, Sorry, Right Number. We are taken to the Wilderman family home, and the mother, Katie, is on the phone to a family member. The kids are arguing over what to watch on the TV, and the husband, Bill, is in his, I guess, study room. And what this sort of focuses on is, as Kate Katie, sorry, is on the phone, we see that they have different phone lines. And as all the ruckus is going around, the youngest, I think it's the youngest, wants to, because the father is a writer and the adaptation of his first book is playing and he wants to watch it. So we've got that going on also. And as Katie is on the phone, they're in comes another phone call, and she, you know, puts the line on hold, picks up the call, and from what it sounds like, a female voice, that they sound like they're distressed and in trouble, but she can't quite hear it very well. And she at first thinks it's their oldest daughter who is away at school. And in the franticness, Katie makes some phone calls to find out who could potentially have been in trouble and on the line. It's not her daughter. I don't think it's her mother. She believes it might be her younger sister, so they go to check on her. Yeah, so they go to Katie's sister's. Everything is okay. Her baby has bitten into one of Bill's books, which is quite a funny moment as well. So everything seems like it's okay. You know, Bill says to Katie, oh, look, maybe it's just one of these things where you think you see somebody you recognize, but it's not really them. And Katie seems so sure that that voice was someone she knew. It was one of her own, as she said. So they settle in for the night and Bill decides to watch the film that his adaptation of his book. And several hours later, Katie goes to fetch him for bed, but Bill has since passed away. Mm. Then we fast forward to 5 years later, and the oldest daughter, Polly, is getting married. And I think in the teleplay, it doesn't really specify that. It says Polly didn't realize it was her father's anniversary of his death that she put on her wedding day, but they changed some of that in the natural episode. So we're on this wedding day, everything's going well, and Katie sees, you know, she's missing Bill, it's the anniversary of his death. She sees the old VHS tape of I think it's in the story. Now I'm getting the story and thing confused, but I think she sees that in both.
In the story, I don't believe the VHS tape plays as big a part. Like you, I read the story and then stupidly went and watched the episode.
Yeah.
So now
I'm interested. Like something, there is something that she's thinking about with Bill.
Yeah.
And she ends up being, I think she dials the number for the old phone, and then suddenly it is Katie 5 years in the future. That was the distressed phone call to Katie that we see at the beginning, trying to warn her that you need to get Bill to hospital because he's going to have a heart attack and die.
Yeah.
And the tragedy of it is the phone, the strange time travel thing with the phone, the message didn't get through properly. And it is a very tragic, you know, events and very, very kind of sad that she wasn't able to save him, even though there was that opportunity. So very much the opposite kind of ending to the previous story.
Very sad. They're I think they're good companions, because this is the one where the spooky technology, it doesn't help. It doesn't help. In the teleplay, there are coincidences. Spider's Kiss, Bill's movie, happens to be on again. It just happens to be on again. And in that, she sort of goes into this state. She tries to, she goes to set the TV remote control down, knocks the phone off the hook, and then is just sort of drawn to it. So it sort of implies that there's this sort of cosmic, it's almost cosmic horror, this stuff that's coming together again all at once, where she was predestined to make that call, you know? And I know we don't want to do a compare and contrast here, but I think in this case, it really applies, because the teleplay gets that across. The teleplay really gets that across. Whereas the actual episode, Katie just finds the VHS and pops it in.
Yeah, she rummages through the drawer, and I think that's what I had in my head.
Yeah, that's it.
I think the very end bit is still the same, where after that phone call, and then she dials the number again, right. And it's obviously disconnected.
That's right, but I don't get a sense, I don't get a reason for her to make that call in the actual episode. Mm. Like, she just, she's sort of, you know, the actress, Deborah Harmon, who I love, from Used Cars. I don't know if you ever saw Robert Zemeckis. Yes. Yes, Used Cars. She's brilliant.
It's a Kurt Russell movie.
Kurt Russell. I love that movie. That's one of my guilty pleasures. And she's lovely in that. But so she, you know, she makes the call, but we don't really get a sense of why. Mm. The teleplay sort of, it gets you there. This is 10 years later, that 10 years later in the teleplay, 5 in the episode, 10 years later,
other way around. It's 5 years in the story. It's 10 years. Is that what happened? Yeah.
Okay. So she's getting, Polly's getting married. Didn't realize it was the same day. I did prefer in the episode where Katie says, "Look, this day, you know, getting married on this day can make this a happy occasion rather than a sad occasion." I did enjoy that.
I thought that was actually kind of nice, because I think in the teleplay, it just makes the daughter seem like a bit of a bitch.
I know. I thought, wow, what a doof. You don't remember when your dad died.
It seemed a bit harsh, but at least I like how they kind of explained that and made that change for it to be meaningful.
But it also takes away that sort of cosmic horror aspect of it, where everything is happening at the same time. So I don't know. I guess one doesn't necessarily negate the other, but it kind of does at the same time. You know, the kids in the teleplay played a much bigger
role,
don't they? Which I enjoyed, except there was one less kid in the episode. I don't think there was a Dennis. It was just Jeff and Connie. And then I think it was Jeff and Connie and Polly.
There was no, Dennis was not there.
This is very much the King household too, by the way. You know, the horror writer, the three kids, the one, the older, you know, the age ranges are the same. They go to the sister's house. Of course, Tabitha's got a sister and all of that sort of stuff. So it was very much like the King household, which I thought was kind of.
I feel like they cast someone who had a very King-esque look to them as well.
Yes, Arthur Taxier. That guy's great. He's very King-esque, isn't he? He's very tall. He's like 6'12". You know, the guy's You're right. And I like,
because we kind of see the him with and without glasses as well, and it was very King-esque glasses for the 80s. So I thought that was actually very clever.
It was good casting, and I liked Bill. I liked all the characters in this one. The kids were, you know, shits, but I mean, the kids are. So that was going to be. They were fighting over the TV and who gets to watch. Who gets to watch what? You know. And did you notice what the movie was that they were substituting for Spider's Kiss when Bill's got Spider's Kiss on the TV? Did you see what the movie was?
I didn't realize what it was. No.
Dawn of the Dead.
Of course. Okay.
Makes sense. They're always doing that in and they do it now with Creepshow. There are a lot of times when they're watching something on TV, it'll be a George Romero reference or something. It's fun. So this story, like I said in the beginning, I don't love it as much as Word Processor. This one seems to be better on the page.
Yeah.
Right? Than it does on screen. And of course, you and I are here just to talk about the page. So I guess when I look at it that way, this gets rated higher as a teleplay, I guess, than it does as an actual episode, because the episode in the end, I think loses a lot of the family business. You know, they always when they get to the sister's house. When they get to Dawn's house, they call the kids to let them know Aunt Dawn is okay. You know, more of a cohesive...
We don't get any of that in the actual...
Right. Which hurts more when Bill dies.
Yeah. And it's about 26 pages of a teleplay. And it really gets you hooked in from the very... from the very beginning, and it's to the point you read this thing in a few minutes and you're like, wow, that was really intense. Yeah. And the way I pictured it was maybe 50-50 to how it looked in the episode. But I did find this to be much better, and I would have liked, aside from maybe like a felt it was pretty decently cast, but I think if they actually kept more of the elements, it may have been a stronger episode itself. But as the teleplay on its own, I thought it was really, really good. And it's very tragic and almost haunting with how it wraps up as well and what was actually going on, because you're sort of there going, feels like everything is okay after they find Dawn and she's fine. And you're almost suspecting where it's going to go. Exactly. And where it goes is so unexpected. I really, really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. And looking again at the, looking at it just as a teleplay, I like it more, I think, than I do the episode, because the episode tightened things up, but I think it tightened it too much.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah, maybe tightened it too much. As far as the differences here between the teleplay and the Tales from the Dark Side episode, I'd really like to see, there was a dollar baby, one of King's dollar babies, made in 2005 of Sorry, Right Number. And I have to think that they stuck closer to the teleplay than the episode, you know? So that's something I wouldn't mind seeing, to see how that teleplay, though we read it and liked it better than the episode, I'd love to see how it actually plays out.
Yeah, be very interesting, actually. Yeah. I think I did see, just doing a little bit of research on it, that, there actually was a dollar baby short film.
Yeah. Brian Berkowitz. Brian Berkowitz directed it. I don't know. I don't know that name. Based on the King teleplay, it says, though Brian Berkowitz is credited with an adaptation. So that suggests it's not the teleplay directly. He did some, he did some rewrites on it. But yeah.
It might make for an interesting comparison down the track.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we can see it.
There you go. So I give this one, what are we going to go with Sorry, Right Number? As a teleplay, which, I'll go 4 with this one.
I am also giving it 4 out of 5. So both things we've looked at today, I have given a 4 out of 5.
Well, that's great. These really worked out well, because they they both got higher scores, which was much better than Lawnmower Man fared.
Yes, that is very true.
Yeah,
actually both really good stories for different reasons, and the stories work as a pairing. And the fact that those kind of endings are very polar opposite, I think works really well. And I think that wraps up episode 3 of the King Zones Book Club. And Steve, what do people have to look forward to for our next episode, episode 4? And we will be aiming for that to be out in 4 to 5 weeks.
Yes, ish. We're looking at a Hitman double feature.
Ooh.
Marcy, a Hitman double feature. We'll be looking at The Cat from Hell and Man with a Belly. That is not one of the, in fact, Man with a Belly, was that collected at all? I think Man with a Belly was finally collected, but I read it in like Cavalier magazine or something like that. When I was in my late teens and early 20s, just went through this whole thing of trying to find the stories that were uncollected, and you could only find them in the men's magazine. So Man with a Belly, and I'd mentioned Weeds was another one that I found there. Yeah. So we'll look at The Cat from Hell and Man with a Belly next.
And if you want to hear my thoughts on the filmed version of The Cat from Hell, you can check out the King Zone podcast for when we discussed where that one shows up, which may or may not have been in Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. Just to kind of bring this full circle. So yes, those are the two you have to look forward to next episode. And maybe you can read them in prep for our next episode as well, listeners. And you can find all things for this podcast at supermarcy.com, and just search the King Zone podcast or the King Zones Book Club podcast on your podcast players. And of course, if you want to find me and say hello, I'm available on the Twitters at SuperMarcy, and I'm on Letterboxd at Super_Marcy as well. And I don't know if Steve has anything he wants to plug at the moment.
Not at the moment. But I have some things. I always have irons in the fire, but they stay in the fire. You know what I mean? I've got some ideas. I've got some stuff, you know, kind of cooking up. And I'll let you know when something comes up.
There you go. And yes, definitely just hit either of us up if you have any feedback or anything else. And once again, thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you, Steve, for joining me and going on this journey of the short stories of Stephen King.
Thank you, Marcy.
And look forward to the next episode. So with that said, everybody, goodbye.
Bye.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. Surfy shark doo 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 doo. And now back to the show.